time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require offline assistance, you may depress star, then zero. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. Your hosting speaker, David Warlock. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's Men's Basketball Rules Committee teleconference. Our speakers today will include Rick Byrd, the head men's basketball coach at Belmont University and the chair of the Rules Committee, Dan Gavitt, the vice president for men's basketball for the NCAA, and J.D. Collins, our national coordinator for men's basketball officiating. Just a note that this call is being transcribed, and we will have that ready for distribution shortly after this afternoon's teleconference. Before we take any questions, I'll turn the call over to Coach Byrd, and he'll have an opening statement. Coach?
Thank you, David. First, I want to thank everyone for being on the call, and secondly, I want to thank the Men's Basketball Committee for an extraordinary week of work, of hard work. I'm so impressed with their dedication to the game that we have, and helping us to arrive at some rule changes and some emphasis that we think will make our game better. I think that the areas of concern in our game have been about pace of play, they've been about scoring, they've been about increased physicality defensively. There are concerns about how long it takes to play our game sometimes, particularly as we've introduced review in the last 2 minutes. And I think we've addressed all of these areas as best we can. Writing rules is not always easy, and there's a lot of people in the room with different viewpoints, but the way this committee came together to try to do what's best for our game was pretty impressive to me. So with that, taking questions.
Thanks, Coach. Kevin, we're ready for our first question.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone indicating that you are in queue. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, for questions at any time, please press star, then one. Okay, and first question is from the line of Mark Tracy, New York Times. Please go ahead.
Hi, Coach. Thanks a lot. And I was wondering what role, if any, you know, under the new structure, there's a men's basketball oversight committee. I was wondering what role, if any, they played in terms of both whether they were in the negotiations or whether they were kind of their presence was felt in any way.
There was a representative of the committee in the room this week, but I think it's fair to say their role was not nearly as active a one as it is. Is probably it's going to be going in the future.
Okay. All right, next question. This is from the line of Elton Alexander, Cleveland Plan Dealer. Please go ahead.
Two questions, please. One, with the 30-second rule and the anticipated emphasis on full court pressure and what have you defensively, was any thought given to not allowing backcourt timeouts, or in other words, not allowing a coach or player to call a timeout until they cross midcourt? And number two, perhaps for J.D. Collins, how much input did officials actually have in, making some of these rules changes that they were going to have to deal with?
The first part about the timeouts in the backcourt, we didn't address eliminating that ability. We did, of course, take away the ability of the head coach to call a timeout during a live ball, but the player can still call one in the backcourt if they're in trouble. We discussed not resetting that, but the committee felt like that, especially with the reduction in number of timeouts, that you could spend the timeout to get your 10 seconds back in the backcourt.
Well, this is J.D., and there were three officials in the room, one active official, one coordinator official, and myself in the room, and the committee was quite kind in asking us our opinions on the officiating of the plays that they were taking under consideration.
Thank you.
All right, and as a quick reminder, if there are questions at any time, you may press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Okay. Next question from the line of Pat Ford, Yahoo Sports. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Rick, I'm just curious, with these changes, have you, I guess it's obviously very early, have you received any sort of feedback from coaches on their how they're going to react to this, respond to it?
Well, we did meet with the for an hour and a half session with the board of the National Association of Basketball Coaches, mm-hmm. and a lot of names on there that you'd recognize for sure, and then a lot of names that people wouldn't, because they represent coaches all over the country. And Pat, we looked at the survey regarding all of these issues, and maybe the shot clock in particular. And well over 60% of coaches were in favor of the reduction of the shot clock, and that had some impact on that decision. So during this week, we talked to people, but we've been busy as we can be trying to get to this 2:00 teleconference. So I haven't heard from any coaches so far on that since we did it.
Thank you. Follow up. Do you know what other percentages, any other significant percentages from the survey that jumped out as far as people in favoring change?
We've got it somewhere, but I got so many pieces of paper in front of me, I don't know that I could pull it up. But we certainly, like the restricted arc, there was a 64% by Division I strongly agreed or agreed. So in every area we looked at that, Pat. Sometimes you go ahead and make a rule because you think it's better for the game than just going by sheer numbers of votes. But it matters to us in every area.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next question is from the line of Dana O'Neill, ESPN.com. Let's go ahead.
Rick, there's obviously a lot of significant changes beyond just the shot clock in terms of the timeouts and being able to evaluate people who are, quote, flopping. I'm just wondering, as you're going through things in the committee, was there a lot of, I don't say contention, but was there a lot of back and forth, or how smoothly did it go to get to some of these very significant changes in the game?
I would say there's some of both of that. I mean, obviously what you want in a committee are people who have strong opinions and are not afraid to express them. But it was remarkable when it came to the vote that we had very few close votes, actually, that everybody listened, and at the end they tried to do what they thought was the best interest of the game. Even personally, they might not have agreed with it. But we kind of had a charge, I don't know who from, but that there were several issues that, you've heard them and talked about them the last 2 minutes of the game and how long they take, for example. And we tried to address that as best we can without changing our game as we know it, and changing the way guys coach the game. There's never any hard feelings in that room that I've ever seen. But again, I can't say enough about how well stated their opinions were, how heartfelt they were, but then how people would in the end come together to agree to do something that would be best for our game.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next question is from the line of Michael DeCourcy, Sporting News. Please go ahead.
Rick, how much concern was expressed about the ability of the coaches to use the change to a 30-second clock as a defensive weapon rather than having the intended effect of making it a more offensive-oriented game?
There was a total discussion about the 30-second shot clock, Mike, and the pluses and minuses. In fact, when we got to that topic, I asked everyone in the room to give their opinion about how they felt about it, how it would affect the game. And it was the most compelling time in the 4 years I've been on this committee to hear what folks thought. And then, there are people in that room that personally think that 35 is better than 30. And that if they weren't, I'd be surprised and almost disappointed, because it's not a perfect solution to anything. But we did talk about, you know, there's likely to be soft presses that slow the ball down and try to reduce the clock to even lower than it's been before. And I don't know whether I should say this or not, but I told the guys in the room that this is the rule for the next 2 years. There's nothing in concrete that says that college basketball doesn't find out that this isn't a good thing, and you go back to 35 seconds. I don't think you have to keep going down if it's not right for the game.
Okay, and next question is from the line of Mike Waters, Syracuse Post. Please go ahead.
And Rick, along those same lines, how much were you able to look at the results of games that were played in using the 30-second clock as an experimental rule to see whether it actually increased scoring or if it had an opposite effect?
We looked a lot. We looked at all those figures, and we looked at them closely. None of them really indicated a negative effect in terms of scoring or possessions. I think people that were 35-second shot clock advocates could say they also didn't show a huge bump either. Now, we don't think it's going to cause a huge bump. We think it's part of the puzzle, just a piece that helps us get the game headed in the right direction. To us and to me, it's really more about the officiating initiative and getting fouls called that affect the flow of our game. It's going to help that the most. Thanks.
Kevin, this is David Warlock. One of our callers, Nicole Arbach from USA Today, I believe is experiencing difficulties getting into the queue. Is it possible to assist her?
One moment, please. I want to ask her to please hit star 1, and I will see what else I can do. One moment, please. One moment. Okay, first we'll go to Chuck Cooperstein, ESPN Dallas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Rick, were there any thoughts at all, or why wouldn't there be the thought of just trying to enable college ball to more resemble FIBA, which I know some of these rules have done. But what's the harm in standardizing the game when after all, for many of these players, certainly at the Division I level, the goal is to play at the highest level?
Well, I don't think the goal of college basketball is to prepare people for different types of games afterwards. College basketball has its own identity, and I think part of what we tried to do was rob from the good rules of other associations at times and borrow those rules and use them, and we looked at a lot of them. And frankly, I agree with you. FIBA has some good ones that we need to look more closely at. But I think it's about keeping college basketball is a great game, and there's a whole lot of people that like it better than any other form of basketball. And so that's part of it too. But I do think you saw that we took some of that, and I'll be surprised if college basketball doesn't borrow some more of that in the future.
Thank you.
Speakers, please stand by. All right, Mr. Arbach, your line is open this time. Please go ahead.
Rick, one thing that jumped out at me was the experimental rule about adding a foul for players. I wonder what that discussion was like, what prompted that, and how much support there is exploring whether or not to give players 6 fouls.
Well, when you're the chair of the committee, you people run into you, send you emails. Coaches in recruiting weekends have talked to me a lot about this, and there's some support generally, but I also thought that it might be a good time to consider 6, because if we're gonna crack down a little bit more on the physicality of our game and simply call the fouls as they're called, that even though it, on the one hand, it might send a signal that you can be more physical, on the other hand, you wouldn't be fouling important players out of the game or sitting them on the bench with 15 minutes to go in the first half. And there was a lot of discussion about it. And in the end, I think it was almost kind of too much to add that one. And the committee has always tried to experiment and see what it looks like when we can on rules. So that's where we ended up. Thank you.
All right, now back to the queue. We're going to remind other participants to go ahead and press star 1 at any time for questions. Star, then 1. One moment, please. All right, we do have a question from the line of Scott Dockman. Please go ahead. Sir, your line is open now.
Okay. Dan, this is for you. All these proposals have to be approved by the Playing Rules Oversight Panel next month. Do you expect them to all be approved, or do you think that there's going to be more discussion before all of them become the law of the land?
John Steinbrecher, who's the chair of the Playing Rules Oversight Panel, was in attendance for the first day of the Men's Basketball Rules Committee meeting. So he's very plugged in to what the proposals were, what the discussion was, has been kept up to speed along the way, especially as it relates to the restricted area arc in that it requires a new line on the court. So I think the committee is hopeful that this can be implemented at the Division I level for this upcoming season. But as you mentioned, Prof will have the final say on that. But they're very well versed on all the rules that were considered, and we'll see where we do go out for membership comment for the next couple of weeks to make sure there's nothing that was overlooked or underconsidered, and then Prop will go through the approval process.
Thanks.
All right. Now, at this time, we have no further questions in queue.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks, everyone, for your time. A link to the press release is on NCAA.com and NCAA.org. And again, a transcript will be available. I will email that link out to you as soon as I have it. Thanks again for your time, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude your conference. We do thank you for joining while using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect. Have a good day.